Mr. Harold Herlash was born in 1905 on the farm we discuss in this interview. He remained on the farm until 1961, when failing health forced a move to Green Bay. Here he discusses life on the farm. This interview supplements the map and other materials in the collection under the name of Gerdman, its present owner. The interview takes place on November 2, 1976.
How long you've been on the farm? You had been on the farm.
How many years I lived there, in other words. Well, I was born on the farm in 1905, and I stayed in the farm till 1961, although I quit farming in 1959.
Were you actually born in the house?
Yes, they built that house that's standing there now in summer, and it wasn't all completed. The kitchen part wasn't completed, and I was born in that house.
Mm-hmm. Who made the house?
Dad made the house. Just my dad and a regular man that he had working for him.
And who was that that helped him out?
I think it was Joe Martin, if I remember right. He was, he couldn't talk, and I don't think he could hear. He was kind of a deaf mute, but he was very handy with a saw and a hammer.
Did he go around and build other houses in the area?
No, just for people that he knew and that he trusted, you know. I wish that I still have the big chest of drawers that he made for Mother. That really would have been an antique now. Yeah, them drawers made into all little pieces of wood, you know, about an inch and a half long, you know, and about 2 inches deep. It goes down to a V-point, and some were put it just about in every direction, and every drawer was a different one from the other, and everything the same. And he made that in his spare time that Mother and Father didn't know about it.
Was he sort of a hired hand? Did he help with farm work as well?
Yes, he helped with the farm work as well. Dad had helped him for farm work. He couldn't find work here or there because nobody could understand him, but Mother knew him from childhood, you know. They were neighbors. Well, he could understand Mother, and he got that he could understand Dad, and that's... He stayed a few years with them there. I got it just as a kid that was around 6 years old. I could even understand him by his sign language and his kind of moaning or sounds that he'd make, you know.
Well, where did they live before they built the brick house?
Well, there was a house on the farm, a log house, it was kind of a long house. And it was put with a narrow side facing the road, quite a distance from the road. Yes, I'd say a lot further than the one it is now. Of course, the road's made wider too. Because this one was built and the other one stayed there, and there was a lot of room in between. And it just had a one-shaped roof, a V-shaped roof on, you know. And that had shingles put over the boards, you know, shingles up like you see they do on some of the new homes now. But that was antique stuff
outside?
Then.
On the outside? Not just on the roof, but on the sides of the
house
as well?
No, on the sides too.
Was it log underneath?
Yeah, it was log underneath. Just down to a certain depth down, you know, and then it was just the log showing.
Do you know why they did that?
No idea. I think they had put the shingles on in the V-shape of the roof with us to make the building warmer. Because there were a couple of bedrooms up there, you know, and storage room. And there was a kitchen and a pantry and a small living room. And there's one or two bedrooms downstairs. Of course, them bedrooms were small them days, you know. Mm-hmm. I even helped to tear down that house when I was a kid. When I didn't have anything else to do, they'd tell me, tear that down.
What did they use it for after it was a house?
Well, after they built the new house, their front part, which was the living room, they made into a woodshed for a few years. They made big double doors, and there were those just a single door, and on it they made a big double door in. We used a pile of firewood in there, so I have nice dry firewood for winter. And the rest of it was into a granary. And the back that, it was built in kind of a slope, the hill, the yard was slanting down to the north. There was a slope there, and in the back of that, they had built kind of a, well, a place like to store a buggy and cutter and sleigh or something like that. You could put two vehicles wide in it. But that made quite a long building in length.
Do you know who had built that house?
No, that I don't. I was on a farm when that bought that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a little stable on there, a log stable, shingle roofs on too, because they used to make shingles on that farm years ago. They had a little building there, oh, I'd say maybe 10 by 14, something like that. Mm-hmm. And they used to make shingles in there. Then they used to take them down. That was just half a mile from the water, you know, and they used to put them there, then flat bottom boats used to come in and skids, and they used to ship them out.
Were they still making shingles on the farm when you were a child?
No. Yeah. No. But the building was still there, and some of the older equipment that they had used, all that. That should have been safe, some of that equipment, you know, but it wasn't. So, it's quite a memory when you think back of it. No, them logs, well, they had been hewed out square about a foot and a half thick, you know, just as straight. You couldn't see a notch of the axe in them and all that, on that little, where they had made that, them shingles.
Mm. So that was a log building too?
Yeah, that was a log building too. And besides that, there was a stable on there, a little ways away, further down, a little further north, down, not too far, where there was room to keep two horses, one cow, and maybe a brood sow or something like that for winter in there, and a few chickens that would fly up and roost wherever they could on, because I remember them in there too. And for a grain barn, well, there was a little grain barn, like, well, a lot of people's got garages that big now. There was only about 3-4 acres under cultivation when Dad took the farm over.
How much did he buy when he...
120 acres.
Mm-hmm.
And there were just on the quarter line of the sections, so there was 140 in each section.
What did that make any difference?
Well, it did with the taxes and the school districts, because they belong to three different school districts.
How did they work that out?
Well, they worked that out at the town board, you know, the value of the buildings that was on and the value of the soil. Which one had the higher soil, or that was assessed higher than where the soil wasn't so good, or where there was timber on, or where it was just swampy or brush, you know, that was assessed less.
Did you have swamp or timber on your land?
Yeah, but at the time I was in there, that I remember in my days, the bulk of the good timber was off. But there used to be a lot of cedar on there. Because the log barn that's on there now, there's a part of it that's covered with boards over it. I don't know if you went in it or not, or just took pictures. And that was all logs that still came from out of the woods there.
How did they haul those?
Well, a sleigh and a team of horses, mm-hmm. out of the, in winter months, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They'd skid them out or make paths in the woods where they could get through to get to them. Those are pretty big ones, some long ones, because there are some pretty the size of that table there, and height on them, they were standing
3 or 4 feet across.
Sure.
Yeah.
Wow. Or those were the bottom ones, always more, not on the ground.
Did they ever make beer in your house?
Not in the house, but out of the house mm-hmm. they did. They made a lot of it.
Where, what kind of building did they use for that?
They didn't use no building. They had a, well, you could call it a tank. It was round, made out of staves, you know. Where that had been made, if that was handmade, or if the folks had bought that or not, I don't know. Then they had a cover, you know, that closed up over it, so that they could put the barley in there to germinate it, so that they could get the sprouts. Then, of course, that was broken off or ground up in order to make the malt. That was the beginning of it. And then they had a metal tank, galvanized tank. That didn't have, well, that was partly covered. And that was about, about 8 feet long and about 5 feet wide. And that was built up on a foundation made out of rocks, of course, mortared in, you know, where you could stick cordwood under there to fire it. And the share cordwood I put in there already.
Is that your job?
Mostly was, and they made it. That, and keep adding water. That was right close to the pump, you know. And adding water on as it would simmer down, you know, boil down. I had to keep so much water in there, you know. Then after so much, well, they'd take that, they'd drain that off of the malt, you know. Mm-hmm. And sift it out good, you know, screen it, and then it's boil it some more. Tanks were cleaned and everything was boiled back again. It was a lot of work to it. Just the making of the beer took a full day, early in the morning till late at night. That was the finishing of it, you know.
When did you usually make that?
Any time of the year that they wanted to. But they always used to make 8, 9 half barrels at a time. And they used to put yeast in it, you know, and they used to cork that, and there was, well, they didn't make it the strength that they wanted it. But the Belgian people in our community didn't drink much coffee. They mostly kept coffee in the house for when company come the rest of the time. It was beer. For coffee, you drink a cup of coffee or milk. And for the rest of the meals, it was beer. You'd probably drink a glass, 2 glasses, 3, whatever you were dry for and eating, you know, but it was made weak enough, you know, but it was nourishing. That beer was very, very nourishing. Mm. And they made.
Did the children drink beer too?
Oh, sure. We all did. I think when I left the mug bottle, I drank beer.
Was there ever an outdoor oven on the farm?
No, there wasn't. No. I remember on my mother's side, there was one there. Because I seen him bake bread in it and one thing and the other. But we never had that on the farm. So that wasn't one of the first farms that was homesteaded. Mm. You know, where we were there, we were on the borderline of different nationalities too, our farm. Them days was more of a mixtures in religion and all that, you know. They talk German or Bohemian or Norwegians or whatever it was. You know, they were all mixed up. It seemed as if though as time grew on, the young people, the Belgians took it and they spread out further and further and further. When I went to school, I think there was only about 2 families. I had a 1.75 miles to walk to school, and I think there was only about 2 families on the side I was going to school that could talk Belgian.
Oh, yeah. Did you talk only Belgian when you went to school?
You had to say my name and cat and dog besides.
In English?
In English, that's right. That made it very hard, because the teacher always had to show me a picture and then say it, you know. It's all right that I knew all animals of every kind, wild ones and tame ones and everything, so right away that gave me a general idea of what she wanted to know.
Which you knew the animals' names in...
In Belgium, in yes. Belgium.
Well, wasn't the Herlash family one of the biggest families up there as far as...
Well, I doesn't say that my parents' family are the biggest ones. But when they came across from Belgium, they must have cleaned up all the Belgians there was in Germany, in Belgium. Because there was uncles, there was aunts, there was cousins, there was nephews, there was some of every kind. My grandfather told me, my grandfather I know, I don't remember him. Saw his picture, but that's all. And I know some of the other Erdashes that were around, that had a lot bigger families than what those from on my side came.
So there were some different groups of Herlashes.
Yes.
They're not all one family.
No. No, like here in Green Bay, just about every Herlash that's here in Green Bay that's related to me, but so I'm so far that I don't know what it's what. Yeah. But by the history that the folks always told me, you know, my great-grandpa told me a lot, Grandpa Clement, you know. He told me a lot about my ancestors, all that, and because he was a great hunter, you know, and he always had me hunting when he'd come across, and I'd go in the woods with him, whatever, I was too young to carry a gun, and he'd get talking about all kinds of stuff like that, you know. So he told me a lot of stuff like that, how they had came, you know, and who was who, the relation, but I was too young, you know, to think about writing it down, even.
Can you remember any of that to tell now?
No, I couldn't trace some family from there. There's four or five of the families, the old ones that I remember, you know. But they started moving out to Green Bay, you know, one thing or the other. But there in the vicinity where we lived a little bit further south, and there, at part of the time there was enough Herdashes around there, they were calling it Herdashville.
Where was this?
Well, south from our place, coming south of our place, we're about 2-3 miles distance. Mm-hmm. All along the bay there, all that, no one knows. Mm-hmm. Once in a while another family in, but besides that was Herdashville. But that gradually died off.
Where did you hunt?
Well, there was woods on the farm, a lot of it, because I said Dad only had 3-4 acres clear. And everybody had woods around then, you know, and if you wanted somebody else's land to hunt, we'd hunt squirrels and rabbits, you know, and stuff like that. There was no law against what you killed. Mm-hmm. But those were mostly cottontail hunting. That he done. He used to take his gun, he used to walk across from his place, which was 1, 2, 3, 4 days if he'd come straight across. And he went across somebody else's woods already to start, you know, besides some of his own. And then he'd get home around maybe 10 o'clock and we'd go for a little walk in the woods. We'd probably get a couple more rabbits and he probably had one or two already before. And we'd clean him, and then if he wasn't tired, well, we'd go some more, and if he was tired, we'd talk a while, and then a lot of times, Dad would tell me, hitch up a horse and a buggy and take him back, or he used to say, no, I'm going to hunt some more and go back across.
What was his name?
Clement.
Clement Herlash?
Mm-hmm.
And he was your great-grandfather?
He was my grandpa.
He was your grandpa?
Yeah. My great-grandpa was Christofferson. Christom, they used to say in Belgium. Oh, it's all the same because you're Belgian, you know what I mean.
Is that a nickname they called him?
No, that was the way they used to pronounce it in Belgium.
Oh. Did he tell any story? Your grandfather tell any stories about the old country?
Not much. Not much, and I was pretty young at the time that I didn't pay much attention to it. All what I know is that they said that they had small homes and that the barns were attached right to the homes, you know.
Now, why didn't they build their barns the same way in America? Do you know?
Well, because they had a lot of land here, and over there they had just a few acres. The people that go over there now tell me the majority of the farms over there are still like that now. You know, them people that go to them building clubs, all that. If my health would have left me, I would have gone already too.
Was there ever a chapel on your land?
No, there wasn't. But there was one. The land was 2 40s along the road and 1 40 going in the back. So that would have been half a mile across the land. There was a chapel there on another farm, on a Destry farm. Mm-hmm. I think it's still standing there.
Is it the Gordon Destry's now?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a picture of that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever go to that chapel sometimes?
Oh, yes, a lot of times. Mm-hmm. A lot of times. And then there was a Catholic church just on the corner. I heard happening that when you turn to go down that road.
Mm-hmm.
St. Joseph's used to be there. But that was a mission church, you know. And priests used to come on there and say Mass on Monday. So you really had to work on Sunday if you were going to do anything, then work on Monday, and Dad would get company on Sunday, and then on Monday, you know, you couldn't work on Sunday, and on Monday you had to go to church. So it was wasting too much time. So when we saw that, we started going to church to Brussels, where it's St. Francis Xavier now. And that's the way the church just continued, because after he went and a few others started to do that, well, the congregation got so small that...
Was St. Joseph's mostly Belgians?
Yes. Yeah, because further, right back of us, when I said it was a different nationality, a little ways further than it was, all one little neighborhood of Belgians again. So they mostly all belonged there.
Which way was that from you?
North.
North of you, there were some
mm-hmm.
Belgians.
Oh, yeah.
Did anyone in your family ever belong to Vallat's church?
Not that I know of.
Do you remember that church?
Oh, yes. I remember that church. That church is still standing.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, we've heard that he was a real character.
Oh, yes. I was reading the history of that church here this summer yet. I got some books from Father Vandenbosch that's teaching at Pennings about all the first churches and the Catholic religion in Wisconsin. You know, that was very educational. And of course, all that was in there too, you know.
Did you know families? I mean, were there any divisions because of that church?
No. No, a lot of them went there is because the first Catholic church that there was built further south than that, a little ways further south, maybe half a mile, and that burned down. And they didn't have no means of building it, and no priest or something of the kind, and Vallat had the money, and he came around, and he built that church. Of course, a lot of them started to go there. I'd say, well, when I left over there, there might have been 15, 20 families left there in that congregation, if there was that.
And were many of those Belgian people?
They mostly all were Belgians. Because the other nationalities that were around there weren't Belgians. They mostly all were Lutheran or Presbyterians or something of the kind.
What about the spiritualists up there?
Well, that's another religion that started up when the Belgian didn't have no more church to go to. That they had other church built.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it's kind of a funny history on my dad's side. His folks, my grandpa Clement used to sing in a choir. And they left the church and joined that spiritualist church. And Dad would never go to it. And he had to go way up to, well, what is no more now, to go to church, and he used to walk down there or go horseback on a horse. And of course, he fell in love with a girl from around there, and he got married Catholic. He never changed, you know. And his folks didn't like that. They really were against him.
Now, why did they join the spiritualist church?
Because there was no other place to pray, and they'd pray in their way, I suppose. I don't know. I don't know too much about the spiritualist church because I never went to it except when I had to be pallbearer to a funeral or something of the kind, which I watched a lot of them on Conlon, you know, all the neighborhood.
Did your parents stay with you on the farm?
No. We stayed with them for a little while. We got married in November, and it was either in 25, and in 6, either in March or April, I bought the farm over, and about a month after that, they moved out. They moved to Brussels then. Mother arthritis is bad, you know, and they couldn't operate the farm anymore. That's why we got married. I was too young to get married. I didn't care about getting married then. My fiance didn't either, but seeing there was a farm there waiting for us and everything, well, we decided we did, and we got married, and we lived happily. You couldn't ask for better than that. And the folks kept their promise, no, I did stay.
That they would?
Yeah, and I did move, you know, in the spring.
So I know you preferred to have it to yourselves?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, they're the ones that suggested that themselves. Mm-hmm. Because they knew we'd be growing up a family and that mother would still be trying to help out, you know. And
did you marry a Belgian woman?
Oh, yes.
And what was her maiden name?
Evelyn Gilson, from Rosière. I saw a Belgian people around there.
Did you ever have a smokehouse on the farm?
Yes.
Did you smoke fish?
Fish, meat, sausage, anything that was a smoke.
Did you ever do any fishing while you were on the farm?
A little, but not much. I mostly helped the other fishermen out if they wanted to, but besides that, I didn't. I could see there was more money to be made sticking to farming, and I didn't neglect the farm, you know, for commercial fishing. That commercial fishing, that was a gambling, you know. You never knew what the price was going to be. You never know if there was going to be a storm, if you were going to lose your nets or what was going to happen. So I tried it maybe for a year and a half, then I dropped it. I sold the rest, the equipment, out to my brother Edwin. No, we had one in partnership.
Now, did your sister live on a farm?
No, when they got married, her husband had went to school to be a cheesemaker. So Dad got them the furniture, and they went and make cheese at Mizier. They were allowed to make cheese there. But the work was pretty hard on her. My sister's always been delicate. She was very sick when she was younger, and she never really came back to what she should have. And the work was too hard. So all at once there was a store that was for sale in Brussels. The store is closed now, and the cheese factory there alongside. And my dad bought that general merchandise store for them. But they went into the store business then. Mm-hmm. They really done good there. And if he choose to make her a sick or if he needed help, well, her husband still went in. And if he made cheese there himself, I don't remember. I don't think so. And my brother didn't stay with us either because my dad had bought the farm for him across the road. So they moved down there, so